and fitted to his face. "You may go in," he said, gesturing to the door behind him, then leaving. Radu and Lada entered. These apartments were to their sparsely furnished rooms what a diner was to Turgu Viste. The ceiling soared overhead, painted in bold, clear blues with gold script swirling around the edges. Chandeliers hung down, glowing even during the day. The windows, taller than Radu, were peaked at the top and framed by scrolling metal lattices. Silk in blues, reds, and purples, the colors of wealth, draped everything. The floor beneath them shined so clearly that Radu could see his face in it. A fountain of water bubbled in the middle of the room, and the walls were lined with low cushioned benches. Sitting near the fountain on one of a dozen lush pillows was the boy. He clapped delightedly and stood. "Here you are!" "Where are we?" Lada asked. "In my chambers." "And who are you, to earn such esteem from the devil?" Radu elbowed her. The boy's smile turned wicked. "Why, I am the son of the devil himself, Mahmed the Second, son of Murad." "God's wounds," Radu gasped, clutching at his stomach. He swept into a deep bow. He had hoped to see the boy again, had thought of him often since their meeting, imagining what friends they would be. And now this. Lada had threatened him, had insulted his father, and would doubtless continue to do both. Radu's fear was replaced with weary resignation. Lada would be the death of him, and that death would be swift and soon. "I had you brought here," Mahmed waved an arm dismissively. Radu peered up through his lashes, where he could see another massive room behind this one, and several doors. "Yes, congratulations," Lada said. She had not moved since finding out they were in the chambers of the Sultan's son. There was no indication of respect, no deference in her wide-legged stance. "But why are we here?" "Because I hate Halil Pasha, and I hate my cousin." Lada shook her head in exasperation. "And who is your cousin?" Radu flinched at her tone. He straightened. No point in continuing to bow if Lada was going to get them both killed. "Why, your beloved, of course. The man whose tongue you are going to cut out and devour." Mahmed collapsed back onto a velvet pillow as large as a horse, overcome with laughter. "I thought he would piss himself. He was so humiliated. By a girl. Oh, he is a loathsome, foul man. I have never been so delighted as I was today." "I thought Lada would be punished." Radu took a hopeful step forward. Mahmed shook his head, putting his feet up on another pillow. "No, I requested that she, and you too, I suppose, be brought to me. I am being sent back to Amasya to govern. I suspect it is more to get me away from here, because my father has no use for me. And my mentor, Mola Gurana, he is the one who sent you in, does not get along with Halil Pasha." Lada tapped her foot impatiently. Radu pinched her, and she slapped his hand away. Mahmed snapped his fingers. "Yes, the reason you are here. I have requested that you come with me to Amasya, as my companions." Lada sat on a pillow nearest the door and sighed. "So I am being punished." "She does not mean that." Radu glared at her, then looked at Mahmed, trying not to betray himself with the obviousness of the hope writing itself all over his face. "Away from here, away from the tutors and the head gardener, and with Mahmed, the boy from the garden, who maybe would be his friend after all." He wanted to know Mahmed with a painful, yearning desperation, even now aware of who he actually was. Mahmed smiled. "I think she does mean it, but I do not mind. I find your sister very amusing." Radu sat on a pillow near Mahmed, back straight and hands folded carefully in front of him. "Tread carefully in that case. She very much hates to amuse." Lada threw a pillow at Radu's head with vicious accuracy. Mahmed watched it all, his face a picture of joy. Radu did not know what to make of this new development, but he dared to nurture that seed of hope sprouting inside him. The smile that met Mehmed's did not, for once, feel false. 15. Amasya, Ottoman Empire. Another city, another tutor. Lada's life seemed an endless parade of droning men pushing information between her ears. It could be worse, though. It could be an endless parade of droning women. Halima painting the world in cheerful tones, while Mara loomed over her, insisting she accept her fate. Embroidery in place of history, courtliness in place of languages. But at least, if she was learning embroidery with Halima, she would have needles to stab out Mola Gurana's eyes. Mola Gurana, Mehmed's lifeless teacher, either did not realize or did not care that Lada spent much of her time idly dreaming of smashing his spectacles into his face. She suspected that if he did know, it would not change his expression one bit. He was a man without passions. This meant he did not beat Lada for disobedience. Thankfully, he also did not beat Radu on her behalf. Her relief was tempered by the knowledge that they would find something else to hurt her with. They always did. During their first lesson, as Radu had feverishly scrambled to keep up and Mehmed had recited whole sections of the Quran, Lada spoke only in Valachian. Mola Gurana had merely gazed at her, impassive behind those hated lenses, and informed her that his sole duty was to educate Mehmed. And, he had added in a disinterested tone, I do not think women capable of much learning. It is to do with the shape of their heads. Lada excelled after that. She memorized more sections of the Quran than either of the boys, and intoned them in a mocking imitation of Mola Gurana. She completed every theorem and practice of the mathematic and algebraic problems. She knew the history of the Ottoman state and Mehmed's line of descent, as well as Mehmed himself. Mehmed was nearly 13, born between Lada and Radu. He was a third son, his mother a slave concubine, and his father favored the eldest two sons, which subjected Mehmed to gossip and shame. It was dreary knowledge, and Lada worked hard not to relate to or pity Mehmed. But above all, more than any other subject, she devoured lessons on past battles, historical alliances, and border disputes. For a while, she had feared that Mola Gurana had meant to trick her into studiousness with his challenge, but he remained as impassive as ever, showing no pleasure in her attentiveness, never rising to her baiting. It did, however, greatly chagrin Mehmed whenever she surpassed him. That became her new goal. Every day she waited for a beating, for some new horror to be visited on her and Radu, for the real reason they had been brought to Amasya to be revealed. The suspense made her quiet and sullen. Radu, meanwhile, gained back some of the weight he had lost. Lada no longer heard him crying at night. She hated seeing him grow comfortable. It would make whatever lesson was coming for them that much worse. After all, Mehmed was the son of Murad. He was not their friend. He was their captor. After their main studies, Mola Gurana always spoke with Mehmed about nothing but the prophet and the destiny of the Ottomans to overthrow Byzantium and Constantinople once and for all. Lada soured at the notion that a mysterious god hovered above everyone, singling out a sultan to spread the Muslim religion to the world. She had never seen such a god, nor any evidence of him. The Ottomans were successful because they were organized, because they were wealthy, and because they were many. Most afternoons, tired of studying and drained from being constantly on guard against whatever new devilry the Sultan had planned for them, Lada wandered away, leaving Radu to nod and agree and fetch things like a puppy for his masters. Amasya was no Valachia, but it was closer to it than Adirna had been. The city was built into the rocky hills, with a ponderous green river curving lazily along its base. Many of the buildings, including the keep where Larda and Radu stayed, were built into the side of the mountain itself. Behind the keep, growing up the hill in tangled, dense orchards, were apple trees. Larda amused herself by lying on her back, throwing a knife straight up to try to snag an apple. Sometimes she did. Sometimes the knife came back down and nearly stabbed her. She was equally entertained by both outcomes. The mere fact that she was allowed to have a knife again was evidence of how invisible, how unimportant she had become. Even the crispest apples tasted mealy and bitter to her in Amasya. The orchard was where she lay one day in early autumn, as the light turned low and golden, so heavy around her she imagined she could taste it. It would taste nothing like the apples of her captivity. It would taste like home. Home. She lifted the pouch around her neck, free of her top, pressed it to her nose, and pretended she could still smell the evergreen sprig and the flower, now so old and dry it had crumbled to almost nothing. She had moved them to the pouch the night they fled Valachia, and carried it with her ever since. A couple of Yanacheris passed nearby, unaware of her presence. They were joking, and though they talked in Turkish, one of them still carried the shape of the Valachian vowels on his tongue. Larda got up, then darted from tree to tree following the soldiers to their barracks, a cluster of low stone buildings grouped around a dirt courtyard. Harsh laughter accompanied the ring of swords clashing. Larda peered from behind a wall, watching. She was grabbed roughly by the shoulders and pushed forward into the open. "A spy!" called out an uneven voice, still clinging to the last remnants of youth. "Or a thief!" To Larda's horror, at least a dozen Yanacheris turned to see what the matter was. Open curiosity on their faces, they formed a loose semicircle around her.
"That is no spy," said a short, barrel-chested boy with a single thick eyebrow over both eyes. "The little zealot keeps her as a concubine."
"Not very pretty for a whore."
The soldier behind her tugged on a strand of her hair. She ducked under his arm, grabbing his wrist and twisting it behind his back to pin him. It was a trick she had learned under the harsh tutelage of Mircea, and perfected by practicing on Bogdan and Radu. The soldier shouted angrily and tried to pull away, so she twisted harder, pushing against the joint. He yelped in pain.
"You are prettier than I." She put more pressure on his arm. "Perhaps you could offer yourself as whore instead."
"Help me," he gasped.
Larda looked up, defiance in her set jaw, to find the other Yanacheris grinning in delight. The single-browed soldier, who could not have been more than 18 or 19, laughed and walked forward, patting his trapped comrade on the head condescendingly.
"Poor Ivan. Is a little girl picking on you?"
He wrapped his arm around Ivan's neck. Larda released him, and the other soldier twisted, taking Ivan to the ground and sitting on his back. Ivan kicked out angrily, but to no avail.
"You have met Ivan. I am Nikolai, and you are Valachian."
Larda nodded, realizing it had been Nikolai's voice she had heard her home's tones in.
"Ladislav Dragula."
Larda felt a pang at saying her name out loud. They had not been allowed to write their father, nor had they received any letters from him. She did not know if he knew where they were, that they had left Adirna. She did not know if he would care. Radu still worried about their nurse. She had lost her son, and now her charges to this wretched empire. Larda wondered if she had found other work. She hoped so. She did not bother hoping that her father would think to take care of the woman who had raised his children. But she never said these things to Radu. It would do no good to dwell on their nurse. And Larda did not like the discomfort of remembering the woman who had always been so kind to her for so little thanks. If she ever got back to Valachia, she would remedy that. The daughter of the dragon, Nikolai laughed, but it sounded good-natured rather than mocking. No wonder poor Ivan was no match for you. What brings you here, little dragon?
Not whoring, she kicked Ivan's prone backside.
I would be terrified to take a dragon into my bed. Even a little zealot must feel the same.
Mola Gharana is your zealot. I think he is made of parchment, not flesh.
Nikolai laughed, shaking his head.
No, the little zealot is our name for Mehmed.
The other soldiers nodded, giving each other wry smiles. Though she knew from experience that Yanacheris were far from decorous, she was surprised to hear such open mockery of the son of their sultan. She tucked it away as information she hoped to be able to use some day.
I am here with my brother. We are Mehmed's companions, studying with him.
You must be dreadfully bored then.
Come on.
Nikolai stood up, dragging Ivan along with him. You can watch me teach Ivan to respect scholars. As another infinite afternoon dragged on, Lada stared out the window, straining for a breeze to cool her skin. Mehmed rarely interacted with her now, except to glare when she bested him in their studies. She often caught him staring intensely at her, as though willing her to accomplish some mysterious task. She always met his gaze with her own unflinching one. Radu followed Mehmed like a lapdog. Even now he sat on the floor by Mehmed's feet, poring over the same text Mehmed had studied 100 times.
You see there, Mehmed pointed at a passage. The prophet, peace be upon him, speaks of the man who will conquer Constantinople, and what a wonderful leader he will be.
Mehmed's eyes went far away and soft.
But there have been attempts, Radu said.
Yes, even my father tried. But now he is tired from fighting his brother's challenges to the throne, from spending his reign merely maintaining what we already have. He loves to talk and philosophize, but he fails to see the calling of duty his faith has given him. My elder brothers might answer the call, but they are less than devout. The prophet, peace be upon him, mandated that we should not have a state, but an empire. We should be so much greater than we are, and my father refuses to...
Lada let the door slam behind her. She was quivering with rage from listening to them talk yet again about the glories of the Ottomans and their destiny to spread across the world. The Ottomans had already seeped like a poison into her own world, pulling her away from everything she loved. How much farther would they go? She stormed through the keep and into the small armory. It was abandoned, the barracks holding most of the actual weapons, but there were a few items left that she made free use of.
Are you well?
She spun, surprised to find Mehmed standing in the doorway.
What are you doing here?
You seemed unhappy when you left.
Lada laughed, as bitter as the skin of the Amasya apples.
I seem unhappy.
Pardon me if I do not delight in listening to you extol the virtues of your glorious empire, and what a favor you will be doing to spread it by the sword.
Mehmed's narrow eyebrows, finely shaped like his father's, drew low over his eyes.
You have seen my country. Where are the poor, suffering, and starving in the streets? Where is the crime?
Radu told me that you cannot go into the streets of Turgu Viste at night for fear of thieves and murderers. Yet one can walk in Adirna without assault.
Yes, but...
And our roads are safe for trade, which means our people have what they need to buy and sell, to live on what they have been given. They are free from hunger and poverty.
But you oppress those who do not believe in your God.
Mehmed shook his head in anger.
We do not act as your precious Christians do, slaughtering other Christians for believing the wrong way.
Yes, we ask for payment. That is the price of safety. But we allow all people under our rule to believe what they will, so long as they do not disturb the peace.
I am here as evidence of the peace your father instills, the freedom he grants others.
My father is free to rule his people, so long as he rules them the way the Sultan sees fit. And if not, his children suffer the consequences.
Do you know what kind of man your father is? Lada turned away from Mehmed, hiding the shame that colored her cheeks.
The kind of man who promises the Pope to fight infidels and then makes peace with them.
The kind of man who leaves his children under a sword to return to a false throne.
Yes, I know what kind of man he is. He is the kind of man your father loves to deal with. They are both of them devils.
We keep your country safe.
Lada whipped around, crossing the room and hissing in Mehmed's face.
I would sooner see my country burn than see it improved under Ottoman rule. Not everywhere needs to be remade in your image. If we were not so busy constantly defending our borders and being trespassed by other nations' armies, we would be able to care for our own.
Mehmed stepped back, puzzled.
Then you do not hate me on your father's behalf?
Lada's shoulders dropped, weariness tugging them low. My father is weak. Valahia deserves better.
Perhaps you deserve better than Valahia.
No.
Lada felt the fire rekindling in her chest, burning away her fear and exhaustion. She had been away from her land too long. Sometimes she wondered if she remembered it rightly. But here, now, she knew she could never truly leave it behind. It pulsed in her veins, beating through her.
I love Valahia. It belongs to me, and I belong to it. It is my country, and it should always be mine, and I hate any king or sultan or god or prophet that proclaims anyone else has any right to it.
Please do not say that about the prophet. Peace be upon him. Mehmed's voice was soft. Not commanding. Requesting. Why do you refuse to listen to what Mola Gharana teaches us?
Lada looked at the wall of practice swords.
Though Mehmed scoffed at the amount of time she spent watching the Yanacheris, she spent every spare hour observing their practice sessions and drills. After a couple of weeks, Nikolai had even let her join in, correcting her form, laughing at her mistakes, but increasingly admiring her ferocity and determination to win.
Do you know of a Bogdan or Valahia?
She had asked as soon as she dared. The words stung as they left her mouth, cutting her up with the hope they contained.
My brother's name is Bogdan, he had answered.
So is my cousin's, said a Bulgar.
And my father's, answered a Serb.
Nikolai had smiled an apology, and Lada had swallowed the pain that saying Bogdan's name had caused. And then she had fought. Now, ignoring Mehmed, she selected a blunted sword, curved like the one that hung over her father's throne. Even the sight of it fed the fire in her chest. She hefted it, tested the balance. She liked being angry before fighting with Nikolai. Anger carved away everything else inside. Doubt, fear, embarrassment, leaving room for nothing else. She never felt more powerful than when she was angry with a sword in her hands.
Stop, Mehmed said, joining her at the wall.
You have not answered my question.
You may worship your prophet, but he is not mine and never will be. Belief is weakness.
She would not cave to Islam as Radu had, but neither did she cherish the orthodoxy she had grown up with. Religion was a means to an end. She had seen it wielded as a weapon. If she needed to use it, she would. But she would never allow herself to be used by it. Mehmed grabbed her arm, spinning her around to face him.
You are wrong, Lada. Belief is not weakness. Faith is the greatest strength we can have.
Can faith take me back to Valakia?
Faith can show you there are more important things.
Lada scoffed. If you want someone to listen to your inane ramblings, go find Radu. I have other things to do. She pulled the door open, but Mehmed ran forward and shoved it closed,
We are not done speaking. Lara's blood turned to ice.
Would you command me to stay? And if I refuse, will you have me beaten, whipped, all that and more I have faced in your father's courts? I did not bow before your god or your sultan then, and I will not now. Why did you bring me here, Mahmed? I will not be ruled.
Mahmed's face fell. He lowered his hand, and the line of his back, so straight, curved. I have never wanted to be your master. I have servants, and teachers, and guards, and a father who despises me. I want you to be my friend. This was not the answer Lada had expected. She grasped for a response.
Why would you want that?
Because, Mahmed looked at the ground. Because you do not tell me what you think I want to hear.
I would more likely go out of my way to tell you something you do not want to hear.
Mahmed's dark eyes flashed up to meet hers, something deep and hungry in them. He grinned. It was an off-center smile, pulling back his full lips and reshaping his face from arrogance to mischief. Which is precisely why I like you.
Lada huffed, exasperated. Very well. What exactly does a friend do?
I have never had one. I was hoping you would know.
Then you are even stupider than you look. Radu is the one who makes friends. I am the one who makes people want to whip me. I recall you giving me advice that helped me avoid being whipped. That seems a good foundation for friendship.
He held out a hand. Lada considered it. What threads would be woven from this arrangement? She had given her heart to a friend once before, and losing Bogdan had nearly broken her. But Mahmed was no nursemaid's son.
Your father would object to our friendship. He showed us no kindness in Adirna.
I do not care what my father thinks. If you have not noticed, no one cares what I do here. Amasya is ignored, as am I. I am free to do as I wish.
You are fortunate.
But am I fortunate enough to call you friend?
Oh, very well.
Some of the tightness left Lada as she at last realized that the punishment she had been waiting for all this time was not coming. They were not free of Murad, but they were far from his eye. For now, that was enough.
Good. In the spirit of friendship, I must tell you that I am bitterly jealous of the time you spend in the Yanacheri's company. I want you to stop training with them.
And in the spirit of friendship, I must tell you that I do not care in the slightest about your petty jealousies. I am late for my training.
She hooked her foot behind Mahmed's ankle, then slammed her shoulder into his, tripping him and throwing him to the ground. He sputtered in outrage.
I am the son of the Sultan!
She pulled the door open, slicing her sword through the air in front of his throat.
No, Mahmed. You are my friend. And I am a terrible friend.
His laughter made her steps, always purposeful and aggressive, seem almost light. 16. Autumn refused to cool down. The stone walls of the fortress trapped the sun's brutal rays, holding the heat. Radu imagined the shimmering air was an oven. Soon he would be cooked alive. Mola Gurana, who always seemed more than human, now neared godlike status. He did not even so much as sweat as he walked back and forth in front of them, reading aloud from a book about the life of the prophet, peace be upon him. But it was blasphemous to think of anything as being like God except God himself. Radu closed his eyes and expunged the thought,
trying to bring his mind back in line with his tutor, with God, with what he loved learning.
When it was not so damnably hot.
Mahmed fell off his stool, collapsing to the floor. Radu rushed to his side, along with Mola Gurana.
"Are you unwell?" their tutor asked, hands against Mahmed's cheek and forehead.
Mahmed's eyes fluttered open. "We must continue my studies."
"No," Mola Gurana straightened, helping Mahmed to his feet. "You are overcome with the heat. We should guard against further illness. I insist you go to your bed and remain there for the rest of the day."
Mahmed nodded weakly. "Very well."
"I will call for a guard to help you."
"No, no. Radu can take me." Mahmed held out an arm. Radu draped it over his shoulders and put an arm around Mahmed's waist. Mola Gurana watched them go, concern pinching the skin around his glasses. When they were in the hallway, Radu turned in the direction of Mahmed's chambers, two doors down. He walked as slowly as he could, shouldering most of Mahmed's weight as the other boy leaned against him. When they were nearly to the door, Mahmed looked behind them, and then pulled away from Radu so quickly that Radu stumbled from the absence of his weight. Mahmed's eyes turned up in delight. "Run," he said, sprinting down the hall. Radu ran after him, finally catching up as Mahmed burst through a side door leading to a balcony that overlooked the wilting garden. "What are you doing?" he demanded frantically, searching Mahmed's face for signs of madness. "You need to rest." Mahmed laughed, shaking his head. "No, I need to get out of this horrible hot prison." Radu gasped.
"You lied to Mola Gurana."
Shame colored Mahmed's face.
"I did, but if I had asked to be excused, he would have been so disappointed in me. I will study all night to make up for it. You can study with me. But right now, it is too hot, and my brain is melting, and we have to get out of here."
He climbed onto the stone railing, then, in a breathless leap, threw himself onto a nearby tree. Grinning at Radu, he clambered down. Radu looked over his shoulder at his responsibilities. He did not want to misbehave, or draw attention, or do anything that would bring punishment down on his head. But it was simply too hot for worry. He copied Mahmed's movements, surprising himself with the ease of his own descent. Lada always made him feel weak and clumsy, but Mahmed expected him to keep up, which made it easy to do so. They ran, hunched over and low to the ground, stifling laughter as they went. Not far from them was a spot where a tree had grown over the wall. Radu knelt, boosting Mahmed up to grab a branch. Mahmed scrambled on top of the wall and reached back down to help Radu climb. They both jumped to the ground on the other side, where it was noticeably cooler. The heavy stone of the mountain and the crowding trees doing their part to defeat the sun. They had escaped only a short distance when they heard a soft thunk, followed by a string of cursing. In Valahian.
"Lada,"
Radu whispered. Mahmed put a finger to his lips and then crept forward with exaggerated stealth. Lada stood in the middle of a small clearing, her back to them, a quiver of arrows next to her. She had marked out targets on a tree some distance away, ambitious even for a practiced bowman. She pulled back the bowstring, then released it. The arrow flew wide of the tree, landing two arm lengths away. She stomped her foot, berating herself in meaner, more foul terms than any Radu had ever heard. Mahmed could not understand what she was saying, could not hear the hatred and the recrimination Lada spat out on her own head. Radu could, though, and he wondered when his sister had decided that nothing less than perfection was acceptable. He stood, wanting to go to her, to hug her, to tell her that it was okay. She still had time to learn, and she was good at so many other things. He wanted her to stop saying those horrible things, to stop thinking them,
Mahmed had other ideas. He crept forward, then grabbed the quiver and, whooping loudly, ran. Lada spun, murder in her eyes. Radu ran too. He passed Mahmed, motivated by knowledge of what awaited them if Lada caught them. The two boys sprinted headlong through the trees, dodging low branches and leaping over logs, Lada close on their heels. Radu burst out of the trees and skidded to a halt. He threw out an arm to stop Mahmed. They were on the edge of a drop, a deep, green pool, a body's length beneath them, flanked by sheer rock on one side and tumbled boulders on the other. A slender creek sang down the boulders, feeding the pool. Everything was still and quiet. The only sound, their labored breathing. Lada caught up to them, fists raised, momentum set to carry her straight into them. Stop, Radu said. There's a drop into a pool. With a shout of triumph, she shoved both boys over the side and into the water. Radu spluttered to the surface, immediately looking for Mahmed. The pool was not deep. His feet had touched the bottom, and he was terrified that Mahmed might have hit his head or broken his neck or suffered some other grievous injury. Instead, Mahmed floated on his back, arms behind his head as he laughed. Why, thank you, Lada. This is quite the miracle on a day like today. With a growl, she jumped, landing between them with a great splash. After she had satisfied herself by shoving their heads underwater again and again, despite their fighting to get away, she swam to a submerged boulder and sat on it. She looked content, her head tipped back to feel the sun on her water-cooled face. The self-hating, cursing demon of the trees seemed forgotten entirely. Radu had done that. A flush of pride warmed him against the icy water. I did not know this was here, Mahmed said. I think no one does. Though there is a story. Tell us, Radu splashed water at him. Mahmed slipped into a deeper voice, speaking slowly, relishing the tale. Once, long, long ago, there lived a great king who had a single daughter. Her name was Shorin, and her beauty was legend. Lada made a sound like a horse. Radu glared at her. Shorin lived on the other side of this mountain. One day, she traveled with her maids to this side, for the apples were said to be sweeter, fed by a clear, cold stream of unparalleled purity. A young man, Ferhat, from a humble family, saw her and immediately knew he would never love another. He presented Shorin with a bushel of apples he had been collecting for himself, and as their hands touched, he knew she felt the same. Lada yawned dramatically. But she was a princess, and he was no one. Still, he traveled to the other side of the mountain to ask for her hand in marriage. Her father, aghast, but seeing his daughter's preference, presented Ferhat with an impossible task. If Ferhat brought the stream of pure water to the king's side of the mountain, he could marry Shorin. Ferhat tried many things. He carved irrigation channels. But the water turned sluggish and muddy as soon as it left its source. He carried the water in giant vessels, but it spilled or dried up before he could complete the journey. Finally, desperate to be nearer Shorin, he began to dig. He cut deeper and deeper into the mountain, guiding the stream along with him, traveling through the darkness, knowing her light shone on the other side. But this did not sit well with the king. He heard of Ferhat's progress and knew that if Ferhat succeeded, he would have to live with the shame of giving up his prized daughter. Since he could not go back on his word, the king sent a servant to spread the tale that Shorin had died. Ferhat, stumbling from the mountain after countless hours in the dark, was met with the news that the light he dug toward
had been extinguished, forever. Overcome with despair, he fled back into his tunnel and beat his head against the end of it until he died. Shirin, heartbroken and betrayed by her father, disappeared. They say she wandered into the mountain in search of Furhat and was never seen again. Together, they form the heart of the mountain, still beating, pouring forth a spring as pure as their love, forever.
That is beautiful, Radu said, swishing his hands reverently through the water, as though it carried the legacy of the lovers, buoying them up.
That is absurd, Lada said. They both died for nothing.
Mahmed frowned.
They died for love. They wasted their lives.
It was not a waste, Radu smiled, tentative and shy.
I would tunnel through the mountain for both of you. Lada laughed.
Then you are a fool too, because you cannot marry either of us.
Her words stung after his sincere offering, and Radu was reminded why he no longer trusted her.
I did not mean that.
Mahmed put a hand on his shoulder, his smile healing the hurt of Lada's mocking. I know what you meant. This pool is as old and pure as that story, I think.
It will be ours then, Radu beamed.
Our secret, Mahmed agreed. Radu ducked under the water, his whole body smiling and infused with the warmth of a prayer of gratitude for the grace of a beautiful, safe secret and someone he loved to share it with. 17. Lada awoke with a hand over her mouth. She punched twice in rapid succession, aiming for the kidneys. Her assailant rolled away.
Lada, stop!
She sat up in bed, squinting in the dark.
Mehmet?
He groaned in pained assent.
What are you doing in my room? We are sneaking out.
She detected another figure in the darkness. Radu. Exasperated, Lada flopped back, rolling onto her stomach. But it was no use. The spike of alarm that had awoken her robbed the remains of sleep, and she knew it would be hours chasing them before she found her way back. Besides, she was curious.
Fine.
She threw aside the blankets and grabbed a tunic to yank over her nightclothes. She pulled a cloak on over everything, then gestured impatiently for Mahmed and Radu to lead on. Instead of leaving through the door, though, they climbed on top of her bed and squeezed out the narrow window. The fortress at Amarsia was old, squatting low and heavy on the ground. A wall ran the length of it, oftentimes nearly swallowed by trees and rocks. Some nicer flourishes had been added, a few balconies, a mismatched tower, and the wing where Lada and Radu lived. The fortress had also recently been repainted white with stripes of blue, and the tower painted in swirling lines. Lada avoided most of it, preferring to spend her time with the Yanacheris or in the trees on the mountain. Mahmed rarely left. When the three of them did sneak away, it was during the day to the hidden pool. But it was too cold for swimming during the day now, much less in the middle of the night. They moved along the tree line, skirting the edge of the woods, running a course parallel to the river below. When they were a good distance from the fortress, the path began to climb. The terrain was rocky and covered with low, scrubby bushes, and navigating in the dark was difficult work.
Where are you idiots taking me?
Patience, Lada, Mehmet said.
I am going to start sleeping with a knife.
If you had had a knife, you would have killed me.
Yes, exactly, and then I could have gone back to sleep.
Radu snorted.
Nothing like cuddling a corpse to give you sweet dreams.
Mahmed pointed ahead of them, to shapes looming in the dark. Lada thought they were more massive boulders in the mountainside, but as she edged around them, she saw they were carefully shaped and carved into the mountain. Furhat's tunnel. To Shirin.
Elation overtook her. The taste of cold, clear water and the sound of beating hearts rushing over her. Then she realized what was really before her. Tombs. Whose are they? She asked, to cover her strange and embarrassing disappointment. She ran her hand along the outside of one. There was something carved, so faint she could barely feel it. Pontus kings, who ruled here more than 1,000 years ago. What were their names?
No one remembers.
She placed a hand flat on the cool limestone of one of the tomb covers. No one remembered the kings' names, but they were still here, overlooking their land. Mahmed spread his cloak out and lay on his back, gesturing for Lada and Radu to join him. Radu immediately lay to Mahmed's right. Lada stayed where she was.
Come on, Mahmed said. I did not bring you here to show you the tombs. We can look at them sometime when it is light.
Sighing loudly enough for him to hear, Lada dragged her feet and lay down on Mahmed's left side, annoyed with him for asking and herself for obeying. And then everything else was swallowed by the enormity of the sky above her. The dark curve of the atmosphere was littered with light, stars spilling across her vision, overwhelming and beautiful. Vertigo briefly claimed Lada as she stared upward, and she felt as though she were falling into the sky, toward the stars. Then she saw a brilliant flash of light, trailed with fire. Radu gasped. Another star fell, burning brilliantly in the dark before disappearing. Mahmed whispered, as though afraid to break the spell. Mola Gurana said this would happen tonight.
How did he know?
Radu asked. It happens on a cycle of years. He has books that note its occurrence. Tonight he is up in the tower recording our falling stars for the future to study.
Why do you like him so much?
Lada asked, the wonder of the night above her stealing the sting from her question. Mahmed was quiet for a long time before answering.
That day you found me in the garden. Mola Gurana is the tutor who struck me.
You should have had him killed, Lada said.
Mahmed laughed softly. It sounds odd, but I am glad he hit me. Before him, no one, no tutor, no nurse ever stood up to me. They let me rage and rant, allowed me to be a terror. The more I pushed, the more they looked the other way. My father never saw me. My mother could not be bothered to take so much as a meal with me. No one cared who I was, or what I became.
Lada tried to shift away from the thing poking into her heart and making her so uncomfortable. But there were no rocks beneath her. And then Mola Gurana came. That first day when he hit me, I could not believe it. I wanted to kill him. But what he said the next day changed me forever. He told me I was born for greatness, placed in this world by the hand of God, and he would never let me forget or abandon that trust. Mahmed shrugged, his shoulder pressing against Lada's. Mola Gurana cared who I was and who I would become. I have tried ever since to live up to that. Lada swallowed hard against the painful lump that had built in her throat. She could not blame Mahmed for latching on to a man who saw him, who demanded more of him and helped him attain it. It was a lonely, cold thing to live without expectations. She unwrapped her hand from where it clutched the pouch at her heart and cleared her throat.
He is still the most boring man alive.
Mahmed laughed, while Radu remained far away and silent. The streaks of light continued, sometimes coming so fast Lada could not keep track of them. Mahmed held up his hands, palms out, to either Draculesht beside him. Radu took one hand. Lada did not move,
But when Mahmed lowered his hand to hers, she did not pull away. Radu lifted his free hand as though he would catch an especially bright star. It is so sad. They have to die. Lada's eyes watered from being held open so long, and a tear fell from the corner of her eye into her hair. Here, tonight, with Mahmed and Radu, felt like a dream she was terrified to let slip away. But the stars were real, and she would not miss the passing of a single one. If they were not burning, we would never know they were there. I am glad we are here, Mahmed said. Lada opened her mouth to agree, and then bit her tongue in horror. She was not glad. She could not be glad. Being glad would be the greatest betrayal of herself and her home she could ever commit. The sooner you stop fighting, Mara said in her head, the easier life will be. It was getting easier to be here. She could not live with that. I want to go home, she said, sitting up, pulling her hand away from Mahmed's. It was cold where the air hit the skin that had been sealed against his. Can we stay a while longer? Then we will walk back. No, I want to go home. To Valahia. Mahmed sat up slowly, looking at the ground. Radu stayed where he was, perfectly still. Why do you want to go back? Mahmed asked. Lada let out a strangled laugh. How had she felt so close to him just now, when he could ask her a question like that? He knew nothing about her. Because I belong there. You said yourself no one cares what you do. So send me back. He stood, turning his back on her. I cannot. You can. Has your father ever once inquired after us? Has anyone? No one remembers we exist. That is how unimportant we are. How unimportant Valahia was. Even as leverage, they were forgotten. My father would be angry. He would not care. And if he did, what of it? He will not send you to the head gardener. He has already banished you here. What more can he do? Enough. I said I cannot do it. Cannot? Or will not? Lada stood, head pounding. She did not want this, did not want to feel things or care about Mahmed. Are you so desperate for friends you would keep us captive? I do not need you. I do not need anyone. Then prove yourself and send me home. Mahmed closed the distance between them. His face so close she could see his eyes in the darkness. I have no power. Is that what you want to hear, Lada? I could not so much as requisition a horse and supplies for you, much less get you safely to Valahia. No one cares what I do here, because I can do nothing. If you want to get away from me so badly, do it yourself. Mahmed turned and stalked into the night. What is wrong with you? Radu sounded on the verge of tears. Why do you have to destroy everything good we have here? Because, Lada said, voice flat with a sudden wave of exhaustion, pulling her heavily to the ground. We have nothing. Can you not see that? We have Mahmed. Lada looked up. The stars were static, still and cold in the night. All the fire gone from the sky. It is not enough, she said. 18. Radu sat behind Lada, brushing her hair, tearing it into submission. Lada hissed at him. Hold still, Radu said, ignoring her slap at his hands. They sat as close to the fireplace as they could, a thick rug beneath them doing little to muffle the deep cold from the mountain beneath the keep. The door to their joint chambers burst open. Mahmed rushed in, face pale and eyes wide. Radu was thrilled. Mahmed had not visited them much this winter,
not since Larda's cruelty that night on the mountain. Larda studied alone now. Though Radu attended lessons with Mahmed, a formality had descended. Radu hated the distance between them, and he hated Larda for putting it there. But Radu's elation fell away as he realized something was wrong. He dropped the brush and rushed to Mahmed's side. After guiding Mahmed to a cushion, Radu filled a cup with water and handed it to him.
What happened? What is it?
My brothers, Mahmed said, staring vacantly into the cup.
My older brothers are both dead. They have been for months. No one told me.
Oh, Mahmed, I am sorry.
Radu put an arm around Mahmed's shoulder and drew him close. Mahmed stiffened, then relaxed against Radu's side. Radu could have warmed the room with the happiness burning inside him at this closeness after so many chilly weeks.
Did you even know your brothers?
Larda leaned back, toying with her now smooth hair. Mahmed shook his head, dazed.
No, not really. Their mothers were important wives. They were raised to inherit the throne.
Mahmed's mother was a concubine, a slave. Mahmed spoke of her infrequently, but when he did, Radu listened with envy. He missed his nurse, and he missed the idea of a mother. Larda sat up straight, suddenly interested.
And now?
Now they are dead. And my father has finally made peace with Hunyadi. He is tired, and his heart is heavy, and he wants nothing more than to retire to his estate in Anatolia and spend the rest of his days talking and dreaming and drinking with his philosophers. Mahmed held out the sheaf of parchment he clutched in one hand. Larda stood and took it, scanning its contents. Mahmed rested his head on Radu's shoulder. Radu stayed as still as he possibly could, even when his muscles begged for him to shift, scared that the tiniest movement would scare Mahmed away, like a bird. Larda stumbled down onto the nearest cushion, rereading the missive.
He has abdicated.
To you.
He gives you the title of Sultan, under the banner of new peace.
The floor rushed out from under Radu. His ears buzzed with wind in the still room. Mahmed, his Mahmed, had been given the throne of the Ottoman state, one of the greatest powers in the world, draped over his shoulders like a rich, heavenly cloth.
What would it mean for Radu and Larda? Would they be allowed to stay with Mahmed?
Would it mean Mahmed could send them back to Valachia? Because Radu was not certain he wanted that.
I was third in line. I was never supposed to inherit. And I am too young. I am 12.
Mahmed's hand trembled, spilling water. Radu took the cup from him gently, setting it on a table, then took Mahmed's hands in his.
What are you going to do?
There is nothing I can do. Larda stood. She dropped the parchment on the floor and stomped on it. Radu was scared, but Larda was angry.
There is something you can do. You can stop sitting here, trembling and fearful. You can stand up like a leader, put on your finest clothes, and ride into Adirna, like the sultan you are.
Mahmed looked up at her with tears in his eyes.
You do not understand. The courts, they will never accept me. I was never supposed to be sultan. They will devour me. I have no allies, no one on my side.
Larda smiled viciously, put on her most mocking voice.
So now you would prove me correct. I thought you had your faith as your greatest strength.
Mahmed's face hardened.
My faith is my strength.
Then you have your God on your side. What is a court full of sycophants and rivals against that? Wrap yourself in the armor of your faith. Take your throne.
Mahmed pushed away Radu's hands and stood, shoulders back, spine straight. He looked down his nose at Larda, beneath the skinny body behind the face just beginning to shift into a man's, Radu saw a glimmer of what Mahmed could become. He shivered.